You're listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Wayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Bonsoir.
And it's me, Brian. And this week's episode is called The Gangster Behind the Wall. Sorry, Meet the Gangster Behind the Wall.
Yeah, I wrote it as Bedding the Wall, and I think that was just like my head just filling in the gaps of that weirdness. Yeah.
Yeah. Half man, half bed, all gangster.
All man.
Looks a lot like a puppet. But that's probably
that's the Karakuri thing, yeah.
I think that's it. Straight after Karakuri. I was like.
Yeah, unnecessarily big, angular face. Big fat billowy clothes. It's like, yeah, it looks like
a clown.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like it belongs in a fucking circus. Yeah.
So, yeah, the plot of this episode is that Giorno needs to join Passione, we learn is the name of the gang.
Yeah, and our guy from the last day said he'll get him in. He said, I couldn't find the guy, but you can join up. But you know, if you do anything, I'm not going to fucking save your ass to make it look like you're out to get the boss, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Which seems pretty fair from him, considering he had a mission to kill this guy. I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, but they both want to get the boss, so.
Yeah. But he has to go to the, did they call them capos? Or?
Yeah, they call them one of the capos. Yeah.
So his local boss, which is this guy who's in prison, and he's working from in the prison, which is no problem doing. Yeah.
Pulpo. Yes. He is a big old chap. He's almost as big as his cell.
He's as big as his own double bed, which he is also. Yeah.
Well, Jordan mistakes him for the bed. one size of him also, like, you know, he's sort of, his moo-moo is, like, whatever you want to call it. It just looks like a duvet cover.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's weird.
There's some weirdness.
Yeah, that apparently has nothing to do with his stand.
Yeah, there's appears to be a lot of, like, is the folding his ear inside his head, which he demonstrates again in this episode that Haraki did not forget about it. Was that part of his stand thing? He's like, no, that's just a weird thing I can do.
Yes.
So he's introducing weird physical features that are unexplainable by normal means, or nothing to do with stands.
Yeah. It's vampire blood. He can control like his own flesh.
Just
he can do what he wants.
But yeah, Pulpo as well can disguise himself as a bed and also look make it look like he's eating his own fingers when he actually apparently was not eating his own fingers.
Yeah, what was that about? I need to know.
Just trying to freak him out. Is that
it works?
Is that some kind of reverse Hannibal Lecter thing? Because, you know, it's sort of like a bit of a Silence of the Lambs talking to the guy through the transparent, like, screen.
And there's all these kind of rules that the guards put him with, and it's like you can't give him anything, and you can't take anything off him. And he does have a grenade and a gun in that cell just to show off what he can do. So it's like, yeah, that would be a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, if I was sending out your stand to get him stuff, you know, because that's what George Tower was always doing.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's got to prove himself by keeping a lighter alight. Is it for 24 hours?
24 hours.
He comes back and meets him the same time tomorrow with the lighter still lit.
Yeah, so naturally, the first part of the test is get that out of past the prison security without letting it go out. Other than not noticing it.
Which, his solution is, what is it? He turns it into a flower,
but the flame
is on inside the closed flower. And the prison guard doesn't think anything of it. It's like, oh, he had a flower in his hand. Well, I guess that's okay. It's like, you said he couldn't bring anything out of there.
You could have had that in his lapel. I forget if we had it in or not. It looks fancy if it could be the kind of guy who have a flower in his lapel, so maybe.
He gets that passed because the guard is like, oh, it's just a flower.
There's nothing illegal about flowers, as far as I know.
And then he manages to get home, and then he sort of sticks it in a bread roll and hides it behind a bunch of books so the breeze won't knock it over.
So the breeze can't get And then he refuses the several people asking him for a hand, doing various things that would require you to have at least one hand free. Which I did like all those reactions, like the rugby team wanted him to take a picture, that kind of thing.
But then Koichi comes round his apartment building and looking for his passport. And that sends Giorno into a panic. He hides outside and he's like, oh no, Koichi's going to find that lighter. And he's going to wonder what's up with that lighter. And then he's going to
extinguish it.
Because he's a responsible young man, and he'd be like, oh, a fire unattended. I'll just extinguish that.
What can I possibly do to do this? Oh, I know. I shall create a snake.
Was it from the lamp? Was it from the
I think it was from the wires.
The wires going through the wall to the light.
Because he was touching the wires on the outside to get them to get into the room and change the wires on the inside. And I also thought he was controlling the snake, but the snake went for the bread roll because it's a very tasty kind of bread. Was that the logic? Fucking hell, man.
I don't know. There's some like level of he can kind of direct it where he wants it to go, but you know, it's going to be like a willful sentient creature at the end.
Yeah, he can tempt it into bread as much as he can do.
But no, he got it. He was like, come on, bring it back to me, snake.
No, don't do that.
Don't burn yourself, stupid wire. Yeah. Koichi just like not seeing things slightly out of eyeshot. I guess he's like very low to the ground though, so he's not really going to see the lamp turn into a snake or anything.
Yeah, so the snake drops the lighter, sets fire to Koichi's passport. But while Koichi's putting out his passport, Giorno manages to grab the lighter, take it outside, and then immediately get extinguished by a bucket of water.
it was the kindly old groundskeeper who did it in the end. But as he points out, well, the gas is still coming out. It seems like it's still working. Let me try and relight it. And as he tries to relight it, a ghostly stand-like ability appears and is like a curse. Like, you tried to relight the lighter, I'm going to get you, kind of thing.
I'm going to stab you with this arrow in my mouth.
Yeah.
I presume it'll be like part of the initiation is that
if you fuck up the lighter thing and get stand powers,
if you're worthy, otherwise you get shot in the face with an arrow.
Yeah, and then you get shot in the soul with an arrow because there was no injury on the old man. I think was the idea.
No,
wasn't it
looks like this stand could like pull your soul out.
Yeah, stab you with a soul arrow, and that's enough to give you stand powers because it still counts, I guess. Yeah.
Its name is Black Sabbath.
Oh, we actually didn't get the wrong name yet, did we?
No. Not just yet. Any name for it at the moment. That's just one that I just happen to remember.
I wonder what they're going to call it. Like, would they be too on the nose by calling it, like, Ozzy or something? I don't know.
Black Sunday. No way. Bloody
Sun. Fuck. Dark Sunday.
Sunday. Overcast. Sunday. That's an awesome song, right?
Shit. that's the most of it. It's just like a comedy of errors for the most part, but a pretty good one. And also that weirdness in the prison was pretty great. Just like not knowing how to deal with this giant booming voiced baby man who's just so terrifying.
I like this Paul Bowles because he stands out a lot from the rest of the character designs.
Because
pretty much any villain or any of his tenants you meet after this, they usually fall into the same mold. They've got a bizarre, weird fucking costume on, but, you know, they didn't have the very similar body and face types. So it's like Paul Bohr, you know, have him
around. He's felt handsome young man, yeah.
It's early on for a little bit of variety. It's kind of nice.
Mm.
Yeah, the hat proved a little tricky in a few cuts when he was turning for them to keep all those sort of
weights.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're supposed to. They look a bit like light bulbs.
I mean, they could be, sure, yeah.
In the right place as the head turned.
Yeah,
so the old man dies, and then the stand says, "Hey, you saw that light of being relit, so I'm going to get you as well."
He doesn't seem to react to him until he steps into a shadow, so I'm guessing this thing is like, there's some specific rules to how this thing can see. That kind of way?
Yeah. I believe you are right.
Yeah, yeah. Give you the kind of indication, you know, the clues to figuring out the magic trick kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I felt like it would have made more sense if it only just went for the guy whoever had relit it. And it was like they had to write an excuse. Araki had to write an excuse so that Giorno would also get involved in this fight after the old man was dead.
Well, I mean, like, everything would look legit. It's like, oh, so the thing stabbed you. Yes. And now you have magic powers. That's correct.
Yes.
Like, good. You can join the gang. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, the entire keeping the thing lit might be just bullshit to see if people have stand powers. Also, and randomly murder people from prison, maybe? I don't know.
Possibly. They seem to expect you to fail in keeping the light or light, and then
Yeah, that was the impression I got as well.
Okay, yeah, it's a two-part test then.
Yep. And I'm going to guess that he manages to pass the test because the next episode's called Joining the Gang.
Unless someone else is joining the gang, coincidentally, and it's about them. Yeah.
Like I said, it's not the best of JoJo's, but I think I like the bits I really liked were the setup of the Koichi wandering around the apartment and Giona's
mad
panic.
Great. From outside the room.
I think that's generally something JoJo's does really well, is panic in the story and the adaptations.
Like a lot of other things do dramatic tension or kind of horror tension well, but it does like the panic tension quite well.
Yeah.
and it definitely comes across here, yeah.
Yeah, well, there's one I was looking forward to that's coming down the line, where there's a stand that it basically takes control of your tongue and makes you say the opposite of what you mean to say. So when, like, you say, look out, there's an enemy standing just behind you, like, you will say instead, there's no enemy standing just behind you, and it's going, and the guy keeps going, shit, I didn't mean to say that, and how he keeps fucking it up. So I'm looking forward to that. Even though they're about to be murdered by an enemy stand, it's kind of funny all the same. He keeps going,
That's the thing about the panic. It always kind of plays it up for kind of the slapstick of it, despite the fucking... the threat of a lot of the times it's used. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sort of looking forward to seeing that acted out both on the screen and in the voices, because I think that would be to elevate that material a good deal.
I also really like the mechanics of Polpo's recruiting thing. And also, like, oh, there's the arrow. That explains why these other people have got stands. That's exactly the same reason as in the last story.
All makes sense.
Yeah. It's still setting up things, you know, like when Tora gets into the gang and he's in with the rest of Bucci Arati's crew get introduced, and then they go off on their sort of scavenger hunt around Italy. That's when it'll really get into gear.
Yeah, it's kind of getting to know them at the moment is the way it is, yeah.
Yep, yep, yep. Righty-ho, let's crack on with the very next thing. It is Let's Go, the podcast within the podcast, as we find out about all the other stuff we watched this week. Starting with Space Battleship Tiramisu, Episode 3, Freeze/Eyes of the Hero. This, until I watched Zombieland Saga, had my favourite joke of, in the first part of the, first of all, a space co-op. But I always like when people just stick the words space in front of a normal thing to make it science.
But when you acronym that on his hat, it makes it even better.
Yeah.
To being Scoop, yes.
Yeah. Ah, so good.
But then the fact that everybody in the cockpit, apart from Isuzu, were universing.
Yeah, yeah, even the random space co-op guy who I kind of assume we're supposed to never see again, but I kind of hope he shows up again with a delivery. Has the universe sense.
So just comes in, you know, on like the exciting cliffhanger from last week, and it's like, oh, you know, what do you move? I got a gun to your head. I'm stealing this robot. And he's like, sorry, the Tesco delivery is here. They're like, what, they come at a bad time? And it's like, no, come in. It's all right. Yeah, I thought I'd bring in like all the perishable stuff as well. Like, get some like frozen food and chicken. Oh,
I gotta get that into the fridge right now while this gun is on.
Still with the gun to his head, like lifting up the front seat to get to the mini fridge inside.
Dear. Yeah. There's some really good bits in this.
And yes, then Maybach shows up and rescues him. as he's very annoyed that he doesn't have this power that apparently is just so common that delivery men have it. And then the second half, we get him using the Neo Durandal. Well, a new character shows up, and there's like some general suggestion, more hints of whatever
that
the real story is. Well, also like what the real story is behind Subaru and them trying to develop his universe power into something beyond what we normally see. He's trying to open a packet of noodles, isn't he?
Yakisoba noodles.
That was it.
He's got such good control of the Neo Durandal that he can use his giant hands to open like a packet
drain
of yakisoba. And this is becoming really handy because now he won't burn his hands when he tries to empty the water into the sink.
Because he fucks it up every time in his regular human body. This giant robot will make that much easier. He still manages to spill it, though.
Yeah, and fall out the spaceship at the same time.
And then assume, like, oh my god, my Neo sense is so fucking powerful. I'm seeing everything happen in slow motion. Like, no, you dumb motherfucker, you're in zero G.
No. Also, you can see the truth of the universe. It's like, I'm a fool. I poured the water into the ink of a packet, but I didn't take out all the flavor things. It's like, well, before I did that, like, oh, of course, that's why I've been going wrong.
And then, like, complimenting the amount of his power level of his fucking Neo universe sense while he tries to suck the mayonnaise out of the mayonnaise package. Yeah. It's just like, fucking hell, this guy's sick.
And then, like his dad and the lady from the Union, or whatever it was called, saying, yes, that's our ace pilot right there. the hope of the universe.
What was her name? Her name was like Miss White Spy-ish or something. It was something like really on the fucking nose. I assume that's like her name is a pun as well. In Japanese, I mean.
LeBlanc Spyrie.
Okay, yeah. It sounds like it's supposed to be either taken off something or it's supposed to be like a really bad cover name.
She's from the Audit and Inspection Bureau.
Hmm.
Again, it steadfastly refuses to tell us exactly what's going on, but it gives us more hints that something's up.
Like, I'm genuinely curious as to, like, is this entire thing a marketing fucking strategy or something? Because that's how they seem to be literally selling the product. But, like, the jokes are funny enough that I'm fine with them refusing to tell us and taking their sweet-ass time to eventually explain it. Yeah.
And also the fact the hero and his brother, ostensibly the villain, but I'm guessing from the opening credits, we'll probably get some real villains show up at some point. They, at the end of episode one, they're determined to find out what on earth is going on in this shop with all their merchandise in. And they immediately get distracted and... Then now as soon as he's not around, so you know Subaru's not going to remember to bring it up again.
Yeah, he's too fucking stupid, obviously. Yeah.
Well, he's back in the cockpit
now. Exactly.
He's everything he needs. Yeah. Oh, dear.
And so, yeah, you're kind of left as the viewer still suffering from the incuriosity of the hero.
Imagine a story where the hero has no intention of continuing the plot. Yeah, basically.
And it looks like there's some new characters in the next episode from the screenshot. Then on to Golden Kamuy, episode 14, Fakes, in which this production level was so much better than the first episode of this season. I was like, this may be the happiest I've been all the way through an episode of Golden Kamuy in terms of production levels. Everybody is convening on Edogai's, or the taxidermist's, as the other characters call him, house. And...
So he's got to use all his wits to get out of this situation.
Yeah, it works.
Like, unrelated to the main plot, but I love that fucking, that fake version of your man he's made for himself. They're just trying to get the soldiers to fucking obey the orders of this badly taxidermied version of their boss.
I didn't have didn't have like a metal like forehead plate lying around now, so I just put a fucking teacup on her instead, or a bowl, or
yeah, good enough. It's a pretty good facsimile. Doesn't fool anyone. Everyone who looks at it goes like, okay, that's weird.
Yeah, but when he climbed inside the skin of the baby polar bear, then that fooled Agatha.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I was full sure he was going to dress up in that skin and run around as the lieutenant for a while, which would have been, you know, another comedy of errors. But the polar bear was just beautiful, just him running through town. not even very disguised as a polar bear, yeah.
Yeah, but I also was just like, coming out in whatever costume he does, he's wearing, now that his secret is out, he's wearing it around the house whenever he wants, and he's like telling the two soldiers who are guarding him to, you know, fucking keep it down out there, I gotta make some skins back here, he's just wearing this fucking...
Yeah, it's like those furry suits that they have where you can walk on your front hands.
It's like a pantomime horse type of job.
Yeah. It has like a little finger for a tail to get wagging around, yeah. But I could not stop looking at it. It just weirded me out so much.
I bet that's definitely a finger, all right, yeah.
I hope it's a finger. yeah. Oh, God. Ridiculous, man. Yeah. Sorry.
I'm guessing one of the two guards, the one who survives, Sergeant Tsukishima, is going to become a character because doesn't it like end on a shot of him?
Mm. He'll be our go-to goon. I'd be happy enough with that.
And he gets yelled at by Agatha. And you get a bit more of like Agatha's person. He feels like he's the pragmatic type. And it is pointed out that when everyone meets up at the end, the two non-army factions, they do point out like, hey, he's betrayed someone already. He's probably going to betray you as well.
Yeah. And then the thing that he used his specific knowledge to kill one of the guards while the other guard was out taking a bath, because he knew how long that guy took a bath because he's served with him for years. It's like, it's kind of creepy what the like personal information he's using to murder his former comrades. Yeah.
Well, Ishikawa doesn't seem too concerned about it. It's just regular life. I can take him if that happens.
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably what he's thinking. Yeah.
Everyone almost dies inside the mines because they ignored the child who pointed out that someone was going to die in the mines today.
More coming out. That means someone dies. I did like the way that the other two, like, there's so many fucking balls in play in this thing, but the way it brought together the two main groups, besides, Sarumi's, because it's like, they're basically like, I know we're against each other, but let's team up because he's specifically trying to fuck over both our sides.
Yes.
That kind of way.
And their plan is basically just to pay Usurpa and Sugimoto for the skins they've gathered so far.
Just walk away. Yeah.
And Sugimoto's willing to listen. He's willing to walk away after he's spoken, or to consider the offer, rather, after he's spoken to Usurpa's dad.
I think it's Kazina that promised her, right?
Yeah.
I figured that out as well. It's like, because that would obviously change their motivation and for wanting to get the gold in the first place. If it was indeed used not for the benefit of the Ainu people, but actually to raise some kind of fucking Russian rebellion. Yeah.
I think he says it's like you want to use it to like start up your own rebellion and make your own little version of Edo, isn't it?
Yeah. Ezo, I think.
Sorry, I was using the wrong term. The old
name for the country.
He sees straight through Ichikata's plan.
I'm just an old samurai. What do you think I could possibly want? Specifically that. Ah, shit. Okay. Yeah, you
Ichikata, leader of the Shinsengumi, you know, who rebelled against the country, trying to reform herself in a different way, and, you know, and doing away with the samurais. Well, why would he want to return to an earlier state of governance in this country? I wonder why.
What would he do with a giant pile of gold? Yeah.
And then the funniest bit is the bit where Ushiyama rescues Sugimoto Shirayashi, and you think that she's pleased to see that they're alive, but actually she's pleased to see that Ushiyama's alive.
Oh, thank God, Dick Sensei survived.
Jibo-sensei!
Oh, fucking hell. They still managed to stick in the comedy things.
But it's also quite sweet, because as far as they knew, that he got blown up when the building got blown up.
And they had reasonably good time with him, except for...
He was perfect.
Except for the big fight.
Yes.
Except for when they started wrestling through the walls. That wasn't great. I guess in comparison to the building exploding, it wasn't that bad. But, yeah, the only thing I feel bad about is the taxidermist. I kind of hope he comes back, but I doubt it somehow. No, that seems pretty... Because he's still in the opening. It makes me think, it's like, well, surely they're not just... I mean, like, maybe they're just so proud of him, they have to leave him in the opening.
You could bring his skin back if someone's wearing it.
Oh, God, yeah, I suppose.
And then we get the Last Supper parody, which they, like, just give up figuring out how are we going to do this in the anime list. Just
you do a tracking shot. Whatever, okay.
Just colour in the picture from the comic and stick it right on the screen.
It was too funny to not include, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, putting fucking... what's this guy's name? Kira Ranke. I don't know how to pronounce
it. Which guy is it?
In the spot in the painting where Judas Iscariot is.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we mentioned in the last episode, it's like, there's like a great, there should be like a big old drum roll just to point him out as being a traitor.
Yeah, him trying to like calm down the lads from meeting up his secret boss, and was like, oh my god, he's going to blow my cover and Sugimoto's going to fucking kill me. That kind of way, yeah.
Yeah, the last shot is Sergeant Tsukishima wandering away from Tsurumi's building in the rain. So yeah, that was the thing which definitely gave me the feeling that he is going to be a new main character of in a bunch of all the other main characters. It's also the fact if you go through
right,
an arc
and
you survive, it feels like you then get to become a main character for the rest of the show.
you're not only a named character, but you're a named character who didn't fucking die under very like easily dieable circumstances. Yeah. I figured that like the twin, when the twin got killed and he got his ears chopped off, I was like, oh, this guy's fucked. It's like, no, he's fine. It's like, oh, this guy's a permanent fixture now.
So the final bit is him delivering the skins and the message from Edegai to Tsurumi, where one word, iron.
Brilliant, he'll figure it out from that. Yeah. Because he'd already given him enough clues to figure it out as well.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they've got because the other guys were discussing, oh, we don't know how to tell their fakes. But then Tsurumi now knows how to tell their fakes is you get them wet and then you put them against hot iron and a mottled effect appears.
Due to the whatever tanning process it was,
Yeah, there's a lot of fun action, there's a lot of chasing, there's a lot of comedic faces throughout, and there's danger, and you think, people are going to die. Probably not, but then somebody who's in the opening credits dies, so.
No one's safe, I guess,
I bet you.
At least you're not safe for the initial arc you appear in.
Yeah,
okay.
All of you think guys get absolutely fucked up and take energies that you couldn't see them like recovering from quickly or walking away from, but then they're back and they're a main character.
Yes, Ogata, for instance. He really got shot. Yeah.
Really, like, he's missing a chunk of leg. They're all, it's like, hey, you're walking pretty good again.
I did like how they had to like finish off the Last Supper with three guys who were stuffed.
We don't have enough guys. Bring in some of the stuffed guys so we can have lunch with them. Ah, dear.
Yeah, it was, I managed to watch everything, I think. We'll find out whether that was true or not as we go through. But by the time I'd done it, I was like, this is not sustainable, and.
Yeah.
I couldn't get everything in this week.
Totally understandable, yeah.
I was just completely just, completely under the gun on many fronts. Oh boy.
And I would say, while there's better shows than Golden Kamuy, Golden Kamuy does have the added incentive of you kind of want to see where the story's going next.
Yeah, I mean, like, the acting's great, and the story is fucking fantastic. So that's really what it has going for it. That's its strongest suit, and it does that very well.
Yeah. So we'll
like
see.
A lot, like a lot of these recurring characters are like the obvious villains, but you still love seeing them. Just like just
yeah,
doing their thing.
I want to see what the villains are up to. That's always, I think, a sign of a really good show where it's just like, oh no, I hope he doesn't die, but he's a bastard. Yeah, but he's really fucking crazy, and it's fun to see what he'll do next. That kind of way.
Then we've got Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers. Episode, is it 3?
Yes, The Princess of Cruelty.
I'm behind on this.
Did you see the one last week? No?
I don't remember.
Well, there wasn't much.
I watched a lot of things, yeah.
Wasn't much the thing, is that, you know, they have like, some of they've torn it out to two, the Sorcerer's Sword Index scroll in half, and,
I saw that episode, yeah.
I saw that one, yeah, and it's like, fuck it, she's got fun. All the swords allowed you to control people's minds, including the fucking Soul Edge, because that's what it is, it's fucking Soul Edge.
It's got an eyeball in it, yeah.
We can't hurt people, all you can do is just stab them in, like, the heart, but the figurative heart, and turn them into, like, a mind's puppet that I can control, make you attack people. What happened? Oh, yeah, and he was, during that fight with the possessed villagers, Shang Buhan got poisoned because he fell for, like, an obvious ploy and got fell victim to the Princess of Cruelty's poison-tipped fingernails.
It's funny how much he's become, like, completely ineffectual again.
Yeah. So it's just up to Ling/Lang to just get him out of Dodge, just bopping their villagers on the head, like, with his with the B-Wa, and just getting out of there.
Mm.
And then that inspector guy, they would keep doing the dances, comes along and says, "Men, what's going on here? Like, what do you see in front of you? We see some villagers like attacking and going on a riot." Well, it is a duty then, as police officers, to not inspect any further, just kill things, people out, and restore order. It's like, what? Princess of Cruelty thing is, oh, they're not going to hurt these people. Oh, wait, they're stabbing them all to death. They're actually cutting their heads off in a hilarious fashion. There's like just gouts of blood erupting out of these puppets. It's quite gruesome. He's like,
oh, jeez, I'm going to have to catch up.
We're going to fuck out of here. So she retreats. And, when Lin said to him, he was like, what the hell are you guys doing here? He's slaughtering the villagers. Ah, yes, but justice is a word. If you say it enough times, he gets one of the little poems. It's like, justice is a word. If you say it enough times, like, with enough meaning, you can obviously do anything you want. So as you can see, like, the evil, like, criminal, like, Shang Buhan, he's like, you know, because of what he's done with the Sorcerer's Sword, he's letting loose in the world. These villagers got loosened, possessed. So we had to kill him. So for justice, we had to slaughter this entire village. And by gum, we'll make that Shang Buhan pay for his crimes when we catch him. Ha, 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 ha. Snicker under my breath. Get a kind of creepy corncob teeth smile face going as well. What's now? So she retreats to her stable and it's like, fuck it, that sword was no good. But I didn't go need a much better sword if these guys were after me as well. It's like, and she goes back to that one that she hid in the hay bales and it's like, hey, I'm a totally cool sword. I think it's called like the, I had a very much more ostentatious name. I forget what it was called, but basically it's a sword that, you know, it can just call out to you and just try and entice you to unsheath it, and presumably it will control you then, were you to pull the sword out of the sheath.
Right.
Like, hey, come on, come and pull me out of the sword, pull me out of the sheath, and we can go fight some dudes. And she's like, yeah, maybe we should kill all humans. No, I can't, Jesus. The sword can do that to me without, like, even pulling it out, then I I'm gonna be careful on it. It can take over my mind. We cut back then to the what are those dudes called again?
Which guys?
The Dan Fay, the Danny.
Oh,
they're the dudes whose job is literally to guard cursed swords, but fucking yeah. Bad at it. And they're like, they're kind of still worrying.
Like all but one of them was killed the last time, wasn't it?
There's a few.
All
guys.
Of that temple, I mean, yeah.
They got more than one guy. They got two other dudes who get actual names like in this.
Okay.
There's two upper ranking guys who look almost exactly alike. I think they have very similar names as well.
okay.
But they're worrying over the cool bearded boss one, like saying, oh, he's still like communistic in bed, even though he was, he's over the worst of the poison. He's still like, you know, like, still like, you know, pretty done up in bed. We got to think of like a way to somebody out there must be able to do something for him. And lo and behold, they come across this very, imposing looking individual. He looks, looks kind of like, Giorno actually, but with black hair and blue skin and pierced, like, kind of like some kind of vampire Giorno, like, you know, if you kind of went all the other way and you had much more Dio's like jeans inside him.
Okay.
He has actually some kind of weird, like, victory curls in his hair and the long rat tail coming out the back. So it's like, he's just, see him go into action because he's able to use the whole, like, chi control thing and, helps some ailing farmer, just get over some illness he has. He's vomiting up, spitting up this vile black goo. And he's like, wow, I flipped this bill again. Thank you, kind stranger. No problem. It is my duty as a traveling monk after all. And the guy say, monk, get over here. We got a job for you. We got to come to our place and can heal up our boss. And they kind of bring him there and it's like, the way he works is like, it's been a while since I actually watched it, some good hazy details, but it's like, yeah, I can heal him with kind of chi control stuff, but I can only sort of move it around. So I can move it like, away from his insides, but it goes into my insides. And so I will cough up a load of blood and then I'll be fine again. I don't know.
Hmm.
But basically, he enlists his help in tracking down the villains who are behind this crime and saying, yes, as a monk, it is my duty. You know, I must bring restore benefit to rub. I forget what it is now. He'll play an actor part. He's in the opening credits of Nima.
Hmm. Okay.
And Shang Buhan is then, I know, trying to do the same as well. The lads have hauled him away to a safe spot and he's just kind of there. Okay, I can do it myself as well, but, I've managed to move all the poison in my body down to my right leg. But saying, oh, well, that's no good. You can't be fighting Princess Recruit with one leg. I could probably do it fine, but the problem is if you get up and walk around anywhere, it's just going to jostle it around again. So I'm going to take a better plan to try and get this poison out of my body. It kind of stops right there then. I don't know.
What an odd cliffhanger.
It was really like looking for, so like, now that the head of the kind of cool old beer guy is better again, they're going to probably go on the hunt as well and be like another faction on the hunt for the Sorcerer Sword Index, along with Shang Buhan, along with Princess of Grimaldi, along with Lin Setsu and that creepy inspector dude.
Right.
So it's kind of like, this is, it's a terrible fantasy. It's just kind of being, if you feel more like a transitional episode, they're setting up more things and introducing more factions and more kind of like,
yeah.
Mix. All right.
So it's hard to tell where the strings are going to be drawn together and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Actually, since the public had chopped up, you know, seeing like a lot of their, I guess more elaborate, rigging up of a puppet suit, just like gush forth various fluids from the orifices. It's enough to get these casings move around in those costumes and get them to do cool martial arts stuff, but to introduce all these like cool special effects in there too is kind of nice.
Okay.
So, yeah. It is what it is. I'm still enjoying it anyway.
Then I'll change the order up a bit so I get to say something and before I go back silence mode. Non-human creature wife, Jingai-san no Yome, episode 3, classmate and wife. In which we meet another one of the, non-human husbands as we learn that one of, Tamori's classmates has also been made a wife of a strange monster.
It's like a weird pink dog or something.
Yeah, it's like a little furry thing who has like, I don't know what you call them. One of those.
Oh, the straw hats. Yeah.
Big wide straw hat, which it uses to cover its bald spot.
Because it's very embarrassed about.
Yes, and apparently if you offend it, it will curse you, causing you to go bald, but it curses Tomori, and instead Kananoge starts to lose its fur instead. But they seem to be a loving couple, this strange little pink creature and his new wife. That's pretty much the episode.
Yeah.
Also, wait a minute. Is the monster the husband and they're the wife?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, so his monster husband follows him to school?
Yes.
But can't come into school, so it's just like looking at him creepily through the...
Yeah.
Through the window, yeah.
Yeah, but then they're on like the third or fourth floor and it's still looking in through the window. So apparently it can fly or climb up walls as well.
It is a monster, so yeah, okay.
Well, it's kind of like Urusei Yatsura when Lum would fly to school and eventually would enroll, so maybe they'll follow that storyline.
I feel like it's less abusive. That everyone seems to be kind of into the whole monster.
They are, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's it's a very strange arranged marriage.
That everyone just accepts somehow, yeah.
And I really hope there gives no explanation of why this is the thing which happens in this world.
Yeah.
Unless that explanation is as funny as not explaining it.
Yeah. If there's a fun reason to do it. Yeah, sure.
Anything else to add?
You can't really say much about it, because you literally get like that minute and a bit, and then it's gone again.
yeah, it goes through fairly quick.
It takes about 2 minutes now. They've cut down the credits to a shorter length. It's about two and a half minutes by the looks of things you get. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, just double checked. He's definitely got a style, the director. That is for sure. When you top most of his things up, they definitely fall into this sort of comedic, romance-tinged things based on web comics.
It's so fucking weird, but because it's so short, it can't possibly outstay its welcome.
That is true, yes.
You know?
There's insane people who want a half-hour version of this.
No. That's a different fucking show.
It is.
That's a show where you start thinking about, but why did they marry a child to a fucking monster? And you've too long to think about it. I've no time to think about it over the course of this fucking episode because it's not fucking long enough to do.
Yep. It's I just think it's that thing of some people's brains just can't deal with absurdism.
Yeah, could be.
So you just gotta let those people go. Farewell, commenters in Crunchyroll. I don't want to see you back next week if you don't like it after 3 episodes.
Yeah.
I've not seen that Popeye guy commenting on it. In fact, I've not seen him comment on many things. Maybe something's terrible happened to him.
Oh, fucking, now that you've mentioned it, it's totally going to look like I was rumbled as to my secret fucking identity.
Oh, no, he was further down. Sorry, yes. No, he did comment on this one.
Or did I just put in a comment now?
Well, 7 days ago.
Ah, fuck. All right, never mind. It's not me.
No, I still haven't investigated whether they're also commenting on things we don't watch. Or whether their taste is exactly the same as us.
Oh, shit, it might be a good fucking indicator of stuff that bypassed us, yeah.
Well, it's something like, no, far out of opposite direction. maybe they're watching the one about the former mercenary who's now a pedophile maid.
And as I said, that's not even the worst thing on at the moment.
Worse than that?
What's the one which is apparently completely a disaster in terms of production quality?
Oh, that fucking thing. It's literally the fucking, a rehash of another fun plot from the film of war where one was, it's another one of these like, little sister. I'm also, I like the writer, so it's a fucking, an anime about fucking anime writing, but essentially the film thing. I'm a light level writer.
Yeah, I can't remember what the one's called. I did see one episode of it, which weirdly has got loads of board game product placement in it. Whether those board games knew they were getting their products placed in it, I don't know. But...
Yeah.
Filth about fucking, what's a fucking 12-year-old girl writing fucking porn visual novels or whatever the fuck is going on in that thing.
That's
which is a premise we already had, like, you know, a few seasons ago already.
Yeah. Speaking of horribleness, I'm supposed to avoid Goblin Slayer, right?
Yeah.
Is it Goblin Slayer?
Yeah.
I've heard nothing but bad things, but my brain is like, but you like goblins. And I'm like, yeah, but everything I hear.
Yeah, it's not quite fun. It's like, it's somebody who, came up to mind as somebody who read/watched Berserk. But didn't get the greater kind of context or bigger picture by the thing, and only saw like the kind of the aesthetic things that they enjoyed about it.
Mm.
Like, think of that famous diagram of, like, you know, the Gundam shooting into the air, and then the guy saying, "Wow, cool robot." It's like, it's definitely saying, like, you know, same thing, but instead, "Wow, cool big sword."
Gotcha, okay.
My writer is the one which is falling apart. And it's Iro Manga Sensei is the one that is ripping off, or is very similar to.
See, this is difficult, because the first one was about manga, this is about light novels, so it's a completely different anime altogether.
It's a completely different anime about the guy's younger sister who writes erotic stuff under a pseudonym, that kind of thing, yeah?
That kind of thing.
But it's exactly the same fucking thing, yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, enough of this nonsense. Tell me all about Mr. Tonigawa's Middle Management Blues episode.
Episode 15, Playing Hard. I got the name of the show wrong last week, so I'm just going to correct it this week. It is now called One Day Outside Pass Four-Man Hand Show. I forgot the credits fucking changed.
And oh, yes. Like... the new season.
It's a different show. It's a completely different kaiju spinoff. He's barely like put into like the opening credits as well. It's kind of fun the way he's edited in. Changes the context of Tonigawa driving in the car or being driven in the car to him being driven back to the mines in the back of the car. Anyway, so we get fucking 3 day passes this time around. Otsuki gets another 1 day pass, and a friend of his, Numakawa. Numakawa. He wants to go out, get off the same day because he knows that guy. He knows how to have a good time, and he's like, "Yeah, okay, cool." And he initially does the thing where he starts to rush. He's like, "Oh my god, we've only got 24 hours. Come on, we gotta go." And he's like, "No, chill. Check it out. There's a fucking Tankobon beside me. Let's have a look through." It's like, "Hey, have you read this one? It's actually quite good." And end up talking about manga into late at night. And then they're like, "Okay, let's just go get like a small, inexpensive meal." And your man's like, "I'm going to get the most expensive thing on the menu." He's like, no, you stupid idiot. Where are you from? And he identifies where he's from. He's like, "What's the local cuisine? You want fried food. You want this kind of fried food, which is famous to that area. That's what your heart desires. It's not the most expensive thing. It's the thing you want to eat that you should get." So good life advice. But as they're heading off, he's about to head to the – Poby knows, and then he realizes, wait a minute. That woman and child who left the restaurant, they were wearing kimonos. There's a fucking summer festival on. He runs out, and that's a place to have a great good time and lots of cool food. And it was really good. And then they're at the end of the night when everyone's packing up shop, they were like, "Okay, are we going to get like octopus balls? Are we going to get this?" I was like, "Oh, we can't get, I'd love to try both, but I don't think I could eat like a full meal of either even." And so, Otsuki buys 3 servings of each of those things, and his friend's like, "What the fuck are you doing, dude?" And then he gives it away to the event organizers of the summer festival, and he's like, why is he doing this? But the event organizers invite them in to share food, they give him a couple of beers, and a grand night is fucking had. It's good fun, and it's just like, okay, that's not really the evil for him for once. I mean, like, he's manipulating them into sharing their beers, but it's like, he did actually buy them food, so it's all cool. The second episode is another day out for him, but this time the man in black that's following him around, Miyamoto, mixing up my names, is like just inches away from him at all stages, like, "I'm fucking watching you. I don't fucking trust you, man. You're up to shit." And he's like, "I'm not fucking up to shit." And he's just trying to convince this guy to let his fucking hair down and let go for a little bit. And the thing that breaks him is he goes to one of those, antenna shops. Which is, I wasn't aware of that as a thing, but that's really interesting.
Antenna shops.
It's like a little shop that's like the local cuisine of a certain area, but in like, you know, in a city, that kind of thing. So they, like, he wants to go to an antenna shop that is run by locals because they'll know the good shit, rather than an antenna shop run by non-locals because they don't know what fucking good in that area. They're not from that area. But he goes to this place and the guy offers him this mad fucking thing that I've never heard of, but I want to try, like a sweet potato drink. That sounds amazing. He tries it. It's pretty good. He manages to convince Miyamoto to have it. And from that point on, the guy is fully on board for all this thing. They end up getting drunk together and carted off by other men in black. When he's like, ah, come on, another hour won't hurt. So good times are had again. Then Panigawa talks to the audience and says, you got to remember, this is my fucking show, all right? And it's about Tonegawa again this time. He goes back to the cutlet bog from before for lunch. And he's like, ah, oh, I'm not going to make the same mistake I made before. Huh, what a fool I was. I feel like I've grown as a person. And he orders a lady's portion because he's like, oh, that's all I feel like. Small portion for lunch. He's good. But then wouldn't you know it, fucking Otsuki sits in beside him and orders the large. And he's like, oh, I'm going to watch this motherfucker crash and burn. This is going to be sweet. I could fucking even tell him about to order the condiments that would help like eat all this fucking amount of cutlets, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to fucking enjoy him fail. And he like sees him like the initial panic of, it's like, oh shit, did I order this? Kind of looking around in silence and Tanigawa's laughing himself. But then they ask him, he's like, do you mind if we take a picture? Because we take a picture of everyone who manages to finish it and that kind of thing. And when he hears that, he looks at the wall and he sees Tanigawa's fucking proud as like, I finished the bowl at fucking the cutlet bog photo proudly displayed on the wall. And Tanigawa's like, oh shit. And your man's like, hey, you're fucking, you look like you, a guy who can eat loads of things. How about you share this thing with me? And he's like, dude, you fucking ordered this. You're a man and you got to stick by your things. You got to man up and eat this thing like a man. And then the waitress comes around and is like, here's your lady's portion, sir. And he's like, oh, shit. So your man's riding him. He's like, okay, now his pride is on the line. So he orders. It's like, I asked you to bring me what I ordered. Bring me the large. And then they're having like an eating contest. They both finish it. But as the commentator says, like the winner was the fucking bowl because they both look like shit after it. And that's our episode. I still love this show.
Yeah, it's adapting an entirely separate comic with his bits.
Like I said, it changed the fucking title and everything, but it's like, yeah, it's still technically Tanigawa, whatever.
Yeah, it's, yeah, apparently it's a comic just about him taking day releases from the underground labor camp.
Like, that's the stupidest spin-off I've ever heard of, but it's amazing. It's so good. It's like, hey, here's how to have a good time. If you only got 24 hours, like if you were staying in a place, like, and you were like between your fucking flight travels or something like that, it's like, here's things you could do. Just take a fucking load off, man. And it's like, it's all really good advice, except for the slight evil fucking tinge to everything because he's going back to an underground slave mine.
Oh, and the second cover.
It's not all bad.
The second cover of the comic is him doing the Salt Bay move.
What's that? The Salt Bay?
You know,
Bay?
The Salt Bay meme of that Turkish chef dripping salt on his meat.
Oh,
went around about a couple of years ago.
Yeah. You know the one. You know the one.
Maybe I don't remember it is the thing. Cause, yeah, like you said, if it's from a while back.
Yeah, like a year or two ago. Because that'd be when the comic's from. Yeah, so the next one is him dropping some lobsters. And then he's at the cinema. And yeah, so it seems to be just he goes out and the black suits are bemused by whatever he's doing.
That's pretty much seems to be it. Like, and he generally like takes his sweet time or has a cool plan. And like the first one, he did a couple of like not even evil, but kind of dickish things, like drinking when everyone else in the pub couldn't drink, basically. But no, it's pretty nice stuff for the most part. Good jokes.
Looks like his same two buddies as well.
Yeah, his buddy.
Guy with a flat top and guy with like a pencil mustache.
Crappy mustache. Yeah. That was the guy.
I think if I'm remembering right, those are the two other guys who were helping him run the rigged dice game, which keeps him on top and gets him all his day releases.
Question, does he die in that thing of Kaiji?
I don't know.
It's entirely possible fucking Tanigawa's dead at this rate. I don't know. Is this an alt universe? Who knows?
I don't know. Well, I don't know about that guy because Kaiji just escapes after besting him in that game by being a better cheater than him. And when he goes out on day release, he's got like a fucking a zany scheme to try and make enough money to pay off the rest of his debt by taking on the highest particular machine in the world.
But he'll never enjoy life the same way this guy does.
Anywho, then we're on to Zombieland Saga. Episode 3, Dead or Alive Saga. In which it becomes a proper idol show.
With the CGI and everything.
With the CGI and everything. But it also has my favourite gag all week. That I cackled and cackled for far too long. Which is the bit where Sakura is about to do her inspiring speech.
Oh, that was a good fucking joke. Yeah, yeah.
But I can't remember her name now. The oldest one, the one from the 19th century, slaps her and then delivers exactly the same speech that Sakura was going to make.
Yeah, like word for fucking word, except the tone is different. Yeah. Amazing stuff.
And then everybody congratulates her on what a good
Everyone's
speech.
Like, yeah, you're right. Come on, Sakura. Get yourself up off the ground and fucking pull yourself together. Her inspiring speech has inspired us. Surely it's inspired you. It's like, but that was my speech. I had the revelation. I had the growth as a character.
Yes,
just I'm there. The hero.
I just fucking grew as a character.
From being catapulted off a roundabout.
Yeah. That was good increasing tension as well, because she was so down in a funk, she couldn't see the rising danger of the speeding up roundabout. Yes.
And the important thing was this week they revealed that it's Kotono Mitsuishi playing Tai Yamada. So of course you'd get probably the most expensive voice actress on your cast to play the character who's just making zombie noises.
Well, she's got to really sell it. She's got to be able to pronounce a band name while moaning / sneezing as a zombie.
Yeah,
that's difficult. You've got to be pro to do that.
It's like, even though last episode her head fell off, this may still have been the best Thai episode in terms of like, just the fact that she's the one who comes up with the name of the band after eating a pen and sneezing. And the fact that it's now become like clear that she's trying to be in the idol group.
It's just that she is a zombie.
She is a zombie.
She clearly fucking rehearsed. It's just she moves like a zombie. Yeah.
She can't fight her instincts, even after death.
And the fact that the jumper doesn't fit her, and just they got the really long dangly sleeves.
To only emphasize the zombie gate,
So yeah, they're going to do gorilla performance. That was another good gag of when Kataru starts to write gorilla in English and gets two letters in and he's already spelling it wrong and then just gives up.
But he's on like a fucking whiteboard. He can just erase that, but he crosses it out.
Yes.
Oh God. What a fool.
And then loads more whiteboard jokes of all of Saki's naming of the bands. Whatever they named it, she'd write down kanji, so it had a different meaning in the kanji.
Like, and also she'd write it so it looked like a spray tag kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is good. Like, that's good penmanship, I gotta say.
And she becomes the leader of the band, who are now called Fran Choo Choo, because I don't think partly no one else wants it, but also partly everyone's a little bit scared of her once she decided that she was going to put herself forward as being the leader. Captain, rather, she says, because... And also, she seems to still be treating them as if they were like a biker gang.
She doesn't seem to realize what this is, yeah.
No, yeah.
It's all she knows.
But she's totally into it. And the ongoing problem is that the two people who actually were idols are struggling with this idea of... Partly, it feels a bit like... And they don't voice it, but it felt to me like... They felt like the others trying to do what they did professionally is kind of dismissive of what they'd achieved in life, and they don't really want to start from scratch again.
Yeah, and one of them was like a solo person as well. Like,
yes.
So it's kind of like, I don't want to be like as a group. I was a singer in my own right. And the other person's like, I fucking already achieved this and fucking lost it all. I don't want to work my way from the ground up.
And they do a
So I'm undead.
Yeah.
So
and when they do finally join in, they do it's a pretty good job. And the sound in general is great. I was listening to this with headphones in.
Okay.
And outside of Planet With, I think it's got the best sound mixing. And Planet With sound mixing was basically the effect of turn it up.
Oh, fucking, I'm all for that, man. Yeah.
But no, but this has got some really, because when they come in on the song, they're singing much better than the other characters are, which really helped add to their role.
The level
in
of
the
professionalism.
Story. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they go out to do this. They put the makeup on. They go and do this gorilla show. It starts going, they start making amateur mistakes of like, it's Lily falls over.
Yeah, the same Sakura way she did in the training and everything.
Yeah, stops to pick her up, but then meanwhile Junko and I are in the van going, "Oh, you got to keep on singing. You can't stop singing, even if you have an accent."
And even before that, they were like miming along to the music because it's like they couldn't help but the kind of practice in their heads, even.
Yes,
yeah.
And then Sakura later just forgets the words, and that's the thing which causes them to leap out the van and save the show for that one girl who hadn't walked away. Everyone else had walked away by this point.
Mm, the one little girl who maintained interest, yeah.
Yes. I did, I mean, various people defending it in the comments of like, oh no, it's a parody of Love Live. We'll see whether it's a parody of Love Live.
Fuck, I'm sick of hearing this shit. I'm sick of hearing this, like, bunch of all that time. It's just, this comedy thing about this comedy, like, where this, fucking genre thing, it's got jokes in it. Is this supposed to be a parody, if I'm saying? No, it is the genuine thing it is, but it just happens to be a parody. I have to have jokes in it. It isn't, they don't know what a fun satire really is.
I mean, like, it's a parody of probably parts of that, but also, like, of idol things in general. Like, their manager is clearly fucking unhinged, which seems to be a parody of reality idol stuff, yeah.
But they were saying, oh no, the CG's deliberately bad. It's a parody Love Live.
No,
I don't think you can judge that. If they do it a second time, then no, it's not.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the fucking the litmus test for it. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, oh well, when they're rehearsing, it's not CG. When the little girl's dancing, it's not CG. So they show that if they wanted to, they can do this dance without doing CG. Maybe they're doing CG as parody. Maybe they're doing CG because that's what it's now expected of this genre.
Like, I feel like the level of, quality in the last episodes was, if they did it, were doing a parody of bad CG, it would have been like way worse, right?
Yeah, I mean, this episode, obvious. This episode had a definitely dip in general quality. Throughout.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as bad as other shows have dipped. We'll get to Double Decker later and people's inability to draw Travis's face. but there was definitely like an episode 3 dip happening in production.
The first two so strong is bound to fucking happen eventually.
But yeah, I mean, story wise, it's great. And I said it had the gag which made me just cackle on my own with headphones on for far too long. Me back of my mind going, what are my neighbours making at? Are they going to think there's something wrong with me? Are they going to try and knock on my door, make sure I'm feeling well? Because, boy, that was a good gag. Really enjoyed it.
Mm.
But this is the problem. This, unlike Golden Kamuy and unlike Gurazeni, it's like, this is technically a better show than both of them, but it doesn't have the hooks that Golden Kamuy and this week's Gurazeni have of making you want to come back next week to watch the next episode.
The material they're adapting from is so fucking strong that they don't need to look that fucking good.
I think you're onto something there. Yeah. Mm. Are we all done watching Banana Fish?
I didn't catch up this week.
I didn't have time to get it onto us.
I may
have watched it, but there are things in here that are a higher priority for me. So.
I shall hide the column and we won't bring it up again. Instead, we'll bring up Karakuri Circus, episode 2, Promise.
Yeah.
In which they, I've lost track of what happened in which episode now.
They were just about being menaced by a big clump uppers,
which I guess is going to be like the start of a lot of episodes though.
Yes, it will be. But the first time that happens.
Yeah,
and it's
like,
hey, one, we'll go and get you this time with our big scrape up. As you can see, it's much bigger and scarier than the other one sent after you. So also, it's just like a clown, which makes it even twice as scary. So, we'll take you on.
And then he gets the shit kicked out of it.
He keeps specifying, like, that with his big club, he can actually, like, break concrete and shit. And I love the fact that the puppet, I've forgotten the
Harlequin.
Harlequin.
There's no H in it. Yeah.
The hand it's using as a bludgeon is actually like a functional hand as well. It's like, this is its intended purpose. It's supposed to have a broken arm, inverted commas, weapon.
Yeah.
That's a really cool look. Yeah.
It's just like an affectation. Maybe to put you off guard. Because it's like fun. This kind of spindly looking, you know, couldn't possibly stop this one massive hulking mass going up on fire, but no, you can just stop that with one hand, the broken hand it's holding, and then you can see a little bit of like the creativity kind of going into, because we think like a kind of like a, let's say, this could have easily just been two robots, right? And say, no, there's something kind of too, like puppets is a thing where they kind of, the workings of them that kind of interlaced in there are very important.
Yeah,
so you can see, if you can see, yank his fingers right, it'll kind of detach its torso slightly and it can just rotate freely and spin around real fast and we'll call that a special move. Like puppet martial arts technique, tiger swirl. The spin around fast, you smash them up good. It's like, okay, that's kind of good, but yeah.
Like, there's a guy later on that the puppet folds away its legs in a certain way, and you can see the pistons, or the wooden kind of pistons, I don't know the proper term for that, in its back and that kind of thing. And I kind of hope they keep that old-fashioned puppet look rather than go with anything too modern, because it looks really great. And just the kind of, the idea that someone is controlling this with their fingers and swinging around threads to do all these crazy special moves is, it's a really fun look.
Yeah, I think what it is, like, the puppets have a certain conservation of mass, so when you get to see, like, the things fall out of them, you're seeing, like, the whole, like, mechanism at work, they don't seem to kind of just magically kind of morph out, like, we'll say, of a fancier, like, space robot or something like that. One day, no, these things are just made out of, like, wood and gears and shit, so when they turn into anything else, you know, those little things still hanging off them, and to see how they open up and kind of the these clever little, like, tricks and kind of compartments they have inside themselves is really nice, and hope to see. I think we will see a much more elaborate use of those down the line, especially when we get to harder, more difficult to defeat puppets.
Yes, and also the karakuri of the title. So they defeat him quite simply. Then we get some backstory about the Zomifer syndrome that Narumi's got.
It's nearly fucking plausible, I gotta say. Well done, Joe, for making such a ridiculous thing sound so like, maybe.
You'll see that it, I believe it is a massive part of the plot. These three people being drawn together isn't quite as coincidental as it seems, I believe.
Well, the fact that, like, another dude shows up and he specifically, hey, I'm a puppet guy, but I've also brought a kung fu guy with me. I was just like, hold on a second.
What's all out here?
You didn't tell me there was going to be puppets and kung fu guys. This is excellent.
Yeah, and then after he's kidnapped Masaru, then the previous puppet guy comes up and goes, oh yeah, that was my brother. He's part of the kidnap team. I'm part of the kill team.
Yeah, that's why I brought three guys with knives with me. I should have just brought one kung fu guy, but you know, you get what you take.
Yeah. But Shiragan is kind of complimentary to Narumi in more than one way. But besides that, because he is down the shop trying to gets an attack of this of the von syndrome. It's like he's just running around, but straws up his nose and make people laugh, and they're just screaming in terror at this fucking lunatic running around a shop.
This huge muscular man is like, oh, laugh for me. You know, it's a bit of an odd situation, but
she just comes in and slaps him in the back of the head and saying, stop acting like an idiot. It's like, oh, I see, there's some kind of like double act going on here where you're the straight man. I get it now. And then it's fine, it all works.
Yeah, yeah. Also, it helps the fact that she's wearing a costume and he's just a huge, muscly guy in like a string vest, just threatening people in a shop. Whereas she looks more so as like, okay, this is something weird. This is obviously not, this is something we can laugh at, right? Not just the threatening man. We don't need to call the cops about this guy, right?
Yeah. Also, she could have hit him back in the head in any way she wanted, and put the joke in the world. But the fact that she wants the kind of contortionist maneuver where she kind of like does this kind of scorpione kick where she bends her leg around and hit him in the back of the head with her foot. It's like, okay.
It makes it more like a show. Yeah.
Yes. She's ever the performer. She can't help but do it even for times like this.
Mm.
Do we get any of her background in this episode? Or is that
I think it's more so the kid's background, where it's like, that's a tragic backstory.
Yeah. Or he was just the product of an affair by the guy who was thing, but then like he was, after she passed away, they still Todd brought him into town to take care of him, but he was never ever really accepted. And he's like, he doesn't even want the inheritance, he just wants enough money to give his brother a proper grave.
Like, fucking, yeah, that's pretty tragic. I do like the way it doesn't, like, your man's just disturbed that he knows the word, like, mistress and that kind of thing, whereas it doesn't really, despite the fact his mother's, like, killed off-screen kind of thing before the plot, it doesn't kind of talk bad about her like that. He's like, yeah, she worked really hard and, like, to keep us happy and everything, and then as soon as she died, I was dragged into all this fucking shit. I was like, that sucks, man.
Yeah. As well, kind of conveying there that not every person who is involved in an extramarital affair is necessarily like this scoundrel at heart.
Exactly. Yeah.
And not everybody who is in both ways, both his mother and also like, you know, it wasn't like his father then like spurned him, yet he, you know, made effort to adopt him. It was just the rest of the family, I guess, didn't want him there at all. So
yeah, it messes with the line of inheritance or something, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Since one side just wants to kidnap him, they probably want to get their hands on it, whereas the other side is like, well, if we can just take him out, then he won't be in the way.
Yes. By the end, we'd learned that he's being kidnapped by his father's brother, his uncle.
Yeah.
Who we then, the final shot is of him grinning maniacally over Masaru in his bed.
Yeah, that's creepy as fuck.
What's the guy from the kill team?
Ariel.
Yeah, he offers to, take them.
Give him a lift, essentially.
Give him a lift, because he's like, well, I need to go there to kill him.
I was trying to ram into their kidnapping van.
Keep on the getaway vehicle, but I failed. I missed it by a few seconds.
And my puppet's broke, so do you guys want to do it? Yeah.
Yeah. My problem is this week is that I was curious as to how quickly this was going to get through these 43 volumes in 36 episodes. The answer is, it's not, after looking at the comic. The first episode 1 and 2 adapt the first volume.
What?
So, by my math, they'll only get to volume 18 at this pace. Now, they may do some... They may skip over stuff, because they skipped over stuff in this episode. There's an entire fight scene which we did not see. Because in the comic, Arlequin has a go at fighting that kidnapping puppet before they...
Oh, whereas this one, it does a runner before anything runner, can happen. Yeah.
And also, the way the comic works is, this is just the prologue. After the prologue, then it splits into two separate storylines. Karakuri and Circus.
Oh.
And where it will stick with one part of the story for a long time, and then go back to the other part. So it's possible that maybe they'll adapt it in a way.
It might be only adapt half of it. The Karakuri side.
Or they'll cut between the two. More often rather than just waiting for one chunk to finish. Because as I understand, sometimes you see the same scenes from different perspectives.
Oh, but that might be how they transition between the two or something. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Maybe they'll do something particularly anime-wise with it.
Okay.
Mm. Or they'll just do as much as they can and then try and get more episodes later on.
Yeah, the bide is doing a series of it.
Obviously. I'm not against that, yeah.
I'm fine with it. Like Ushio and Toro ran for 26 or something initially, and then it did another 13.
It did.
Yeah.
So they're probably, no, people will find us doing it in two separate bits like that either, I would say. So I'm fine with that. Like, I'm just fully on board with this because I fucking love for your desk and work. And it's got hooks into me because it's, I'm feeling all those familiar little things from his writing, the way he creates his characters, and it's got me all over again. So I want to see what he does with this.
I think it'll get you even more, because from what I've read about it, and this has spoiled me a little bit on some things which have come up, but it feels like incredibly intricately plotted, because he's doing that two separate storylines for the beginning.
Hopefully they managed to keep that up for the anime adaptation, but yeah. I presume they wouldn't have if they didn't have some idea of how to adapt that kind of intricate story.
Yeah, and you go to the character page on the Japanese wiki page, and there's two separate complicated family tree things going on there. So, and the thing I suspected was true, but I'm guessing that will be revealed either in the next two episodes or the two episodes after that.
Okay.
The thing which you suspect if you just look at the Amazon Prime page and see the cast list, and then you go, well, I'm pretty sure they shouldn't have put that in there. That seems like something they should not have been revealed.
I'm still trying to just avoid spoilers for it, yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely, I'd say, one of the things that I'm, whatever way I would be kind of caught for time to get things watched for the slate. This is one of the kind of up there, and all this one, like, oh, this is something I'm going to fucking delve into. It's going to be the fucking thing that keeps me going through the week.
Most other things,
but all other great things. But this in particular is, I would say, if I was trying to limit myself as Brian is doing, I'd say no. This had to be a lock, the same as JoJo. Honestly. So I'm so excited for this, and there's so much ahead of me. I'm actually, I don't care how long it is, I'm actually like relishing the thought of there being so much of it out there ready to come at me, and I hope nothing bad happens and they don't get to adapt the whole thing. They better just adapt the whole thing, otherwise I'm going to go crazy.
Yeah, because scanlations aren't even, they're a little over halfway, so.
Oh, jeez, okay.
And to be, as I said before, to be fair to Amazon Prime, they're just using the official publicity material, which had got a certain spoiler in there anyway, which I'm guessing they're like, oh, the people are going to be watching this and the people who've read the comic already, so we don't have to worry about hiding that particular fact.
I think like what would have been maybe the worst thing in this episode was the him stumbling in on your one in the bath kind of thing, but they played it very differently, you know? Differently than pretty much most fucking anime would, kind of thing, where he's like, oh shit, sorry. And she's just like, yeah, fucking don't worry about it. It happens all the time, but could you like keep that out of your mind when you're fucking talking to me? Thank you.
Could you knock on the door?
Yeah.
Next time? Come on. Jesus.
It kind of tells you more about the characters and their interactions rather than it's just like, oh, you know, fucking titillation, fucking bollocks. Yeah.
Also, some nice big moments with Narumi there were master resolved and, oh, I'm Mr. Wimp. Everybody just wanted to hook with me, but I was like, that's okay. I used to be a wimp too. Check out this family album I got.
I used to be a nerd like you. Look at this. Look at me crying about milk. What a nerd.
Then I got super big. You could be super big too if you just try.
If you just go to China and learn Kung Fu, let's all do that. That sounds great.
I take it you did not find time for more boarding school Juliet.
Oh God, no.
Nah, I shall hide that column as well. And then we're on to.
I'm going to just dip in and out occasionally and see if get any further good fights out of it for my own purposes.
Gurazeni Money Pitch, episode 15, Rising to First. I did not bother going back and catching up with last week's episode. I did not feel that I missed anything.
I didn't feel like I gave a good enough thing of it, but it kind of covers you in this one, I guess.
Yeah, yes. Pretty much. I didn't think it was going to run on so long into this week as well. And to the extent that it actually feels kind of serious now because there's
stakes.
Yeah. There's fucking, what's his name? The softy dude.
Itsuki.
You can tell, you know, he wants to make a good go of this because he's got a fun family on the way, so he can't be letting them down. So he can't be his usually easygoing self, and I think he might be, he's kind of probably trying too hard and putting too much into it, and it's kind of affecting his game. And then Bond is going, this fucking guy, if you just fucking buckle down, like, because he's fucking up my chances as well. I gotta fucking talk to this guy and give him a fucking dressing down, because we're always, he's gonna fucking ruin both of our careers.
I like when he confronts him, he's still like really apologetic and very Bond about it. It's like, listen, dude, you're really, like, you're not only fucking me up, but like you're fucking up everything else and you could do a lot better. Like, I'm sorry to fucking call you out. No, he's actually nice about it, which is, from the last episode, he seemed like he was really like internalizing that fucking hatred into a little ball in the stomach. But by letting it out, he doesn't even like let off that much steam on him. Yeah.
And I do like how he compares him to the other guy, his rival on the, Tempters, is it the other team?
Yeah, Sekia.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, well, if it was him, then he would have managed to make the hit in the game where it counted and then just completely not bothered in the game where they were heavily losing, whereas Itsuki has done it the other way around. In fact, it's worse because Itsuki didn't need to make the hit at all. That was the thing which screwed them.
Yeah, they were so far behind. It was a good fucking hit. You got fucking three on the board for it, but it didn't fucking matter.
But in the previous game, he didn't need to make the hit. He could have just let the ball go and he would have just walked and they'd have walked all the way around and won instead of as a draw.
It's a good spiel. Oh, I gotta show him stuff. What else is going to send me down to the minors? So I got to do my thing. Even though if you just play it smarter and not harder, that's still showing them your stuff. It's showing them that you're still like have value because you knew what to do.
Yeah. Just like throw a bunt when they fucking think that's the way to go. That kind of thing. What suits it is like you need to get those guys home. You don't fucking need to make this run. That kind of way. Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, oh, we're gonna send him down, but we'll let him play the rest of the dome series and we'll swap him over when we go to Hiroshima.
Yeah, because they want another lefty batter, don't they?
Yes.
Because he's a righty other than that.
But then Bonda's words have got through to him and now he's just hitting home run after home run.
It's everyone's just like, that's gone straight into the stands every fucking time. Holy shit. He's on a roll. We can't fucking put him down now.
Yeah, and I like the fact that if there's like a little bit of tension of like he's getting all the praise now, even though Bond is the one stopping them from losing after he gets the lead. But you still get the same thing that of whichever guy is on the management team is like praising Bond behind the scenes, even though like all the TV publicity is going Itsuki's way.
Well, that's the standard way, like the strikers get the fucking, the press, not the goalies, you know? It's the guy who puts the numbers on the fucking thing, not the guy who prevents the other team from getting numbers, yeah.
Yeah, but I think he still feels as well that, seeing Itsuki pull his socks up is, making Bonner feel, okay, now he's fucking done his half of the work, I gotta keep up my end of the bargain and, keep striking these guys out.
But the best bit is Itsuki's dad and his wife at every game saying the same phrases over and over again.
They're very one-dimensional characters and I kind of love them. Yeah. Dear.
Yeah, it's good and the tension is still there. They're at the top, but can they keep it at the top? Well, the preview suggests it's going to be tricky.
But, yeah.
Like you say, it's stakes for the seemingly the first time in the series.
I mean, the main stakes were like, I gotta increase my wages so I have enough money to retire on, which is like, that's very long term fucking game you're playing. Yeah.
Also, the stakes are, when's that girl in the credits gonna show up?
I mean, like,
she did. Yeah, she already did.
She did show up. Yes. She just doesn't know who the fuck he is. I'm still trying to decide, is that creepy? Like, he's not, like, hitting on her or anything, so I guess it's not so bad. I don't know. It still seems a little weird to me. It's like, oh, her smile will brighten my day. And it's like, you're just going to go in and order the fried rice, aren't you? You're going to do nothing.
It's a one-sided crush.
That is
for sure.
When are we going to meet the catcher?
I had that thought as well in this episode. Because he feels like a really weird character to have left out this long. Because we see him every episode.
I feel like he's had lines and shit, yeah.
He's in the credits, he's there. He's this very stoic man, like, wearing the glasses. Like, come on, who is that guy? Who is the man behind the specs, behind the mask?
What's the guy who calls the plays?
He's the fucking the real power behind the throne here. God, I'm superstar from Halo, but he's the fucking guy who's coordinating this whole thing.
Mm.
Then we've got Bono Bono, episode 29, Let's Make a Secret Fort, in which the guys make a secret fort, or Squirrel finds Squirrel Chipmunk. I'm doing it now.
Oh, dear.
Chipmunk, Fenny is a boy. Right.
Otter, not a seal.
Chipmunk.
No, we all... We're on the same page.
We're on the same page. No,
I think we're watching this show. Yeah.
Chipmunk has found a cave. It's a great cave. There's stones. It's nice and cool. There's a space for storing food. There's stones you can sit on. There's a big stone you can sleep on. It's wonderful. It'll be a great secret fort. Let's hide it. Tell nobody about it. We'll leave a trail. We'll come back here tomorrow. It'll be great. And
just the thing of like, is this like how satisfying it is? That's like, see you tomorrow at our secret fort. Oh shit, that feels great.
And then Bono goes insane trying not to tell people about his secret fort.
Yeah, he loses a lot of fucking sleep, clearly. Like, he's the most stressed I've ever fucking seen.
Well, that's because
he's
afraid that if he goes to sleep, he'll say secret fort in his sleep, and then the putaway man will take him to caves under the sea.
Yeah. Because he couldn't keep the secret fort secret. That's what happens. Oh, dear.
Yeah, little boys who can't keep secrets get put away. Yeah, it was before. Also, the squirrel's got this little squirrel chipmunk. God, Brian. This is what comes from recording late. It's 20 past, it's 10 past 10, and I can't say chipmunk anymore.
Shimali Sukun.
He's got this pose he likes to throw around.
Oh, the cool holding the chin pose.
Yes.
I think that's why I don't like that little fucking, the smiley face that's going like the thing, because it reminds me of that fucking pose. It's very smug. Yeah.
And as they're on the way to their secret fort, they meet Wolverine's dad, who tells
them, guys, I found a secret fort.
No!
Everyone's hanging out there. They're all doing their shit.
Having a great time on there, but it's like, fuck this! Not secret now. We ruined it. That's all we had.
But Bono's
like,
yeah.
That looks like a good time. I gotta say.
And he was also revealed that he was also relieved that it wasn't the secret anymore.
Yeah, and it was because they led a trail to the cave that anyone would have found.
Yes.
God damn it, guys!
And it had to be Wolverine's dad, because Wolverine's dad's the sort of person who, when he finds a trail, he's gonna follow it.
Yeah.
This was good. I'm always excited when the putaway man is on the thumbnail for an episode.
Yeah. It's like, what minor crime is Bono going to commit this fucking time? Dear. I think I got the most nostalgia off this one that I have from Bono in a long time. Cause that's a thing he did as well, right? You know.
I know, right?
Yes.
Like hiding under a bush or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a bush where you can walk in or something, that kind of thing.
That is exactly what we did. Yes. There was a bush you could hide under if you were smaller.
Yes.
Yeah. It was like, I could almost smell the earth.
Yeah.
They found it in there. I was like, that's set you back. Those long lost summers.
It's put as such like a specifically Japanese thing, but I think it's like, that's just a kid thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
A kid who doesn't mind getting fucking filthy.
It's great. If one go in there, if I make a little cave for something, find some branches and just fun beat her with fucking sticks all afternoon. It was great fun.
Oh, dear.
I'll just have a quick look on Google Maps, see if it's still there.
What, your secret fort?
Yes.
shit.
Atomic Fort, awesome.
Yeah, that bush is still there, or at least it was of March 2009. I suppose I could just check when I get home, go back and see my mom.
I know, but if you go back there now, you'd be like, I can't fit in there now.
That is
this
true.
This means
yes.
nothing to me.
And then it'll be a very strange coda to the end of this, end of that one, saying,
Wait, you can just recreate that picture of Johnny Cash eating a cake inside of in a bush.
Yeah, that's basically what it was, I think. Yeah.
Righty-ho. On to SSSS. Dot Bridgeman. Episode 3. Defeat. In which we get a whole load of new characters whose names I need to try and remember. There's Ante, who is the kaiju that Akane has created. Akane's the girl's name, isn't it?
The evil one. Akane, yes.
Yeah.
Who can turn into a little boy.
It seems to have, like, actual sentience, like, inspired by Barden. The other two we've seen to Barden seem to be just, like, one big stompy around.
Generic monsters roaring and whatnot. Yeah,
and I get the feeling that he'll have a face turn by the end of the series.
But that kind of treatment, understandable.
Yeah.
He does have a more, like, human-shaped guy rather than the more monstrous kind of form. He looks like a dude in a rubber suit rather than a dude in a rubber monster suit. Yeah.
And
Ricker's nice to him, and Akane's mean to him when he fails.
Yeah.
And it's a different thing from another thing where, like, what's his name? Yuta. Yeah, Yuta Mega. You can't get worried enough. One. Those, like, those monsters I'm fighting, the kaiju I'm fighting, they couldn't actually be people as well, because I'm turning into Gridman, and I'm a person. So it's possible that the people out there who are turning into kaiju are smashing up, and then when I defeat them, that they die as well. And it's like, oh, I don't know.
I mean, like, even Gridman pointing out is like, yeah, but, like, they're causing, like, massive amounts of fucking casualties. So if you don't kill them, a lot more people are going to die. But it's still, like, rough on him. Like, he's a kid. It's like thinking about having to kill a person, potentially.
Hmm. But anyways, enough of that noise. There's a big monster shows up. Yeah, it's Ante in giant monster form and kaiju form. You got to go fight him.
Yeah, and get defeated. And then you start getting Rika sort of panicking. She wanted to ask or tell Yuta about how proud she was of him protecting the city with Gridman, and Samurai Caliber says you should go actually tell him that he'll appreciate it. But then she doesn't.
And she also, like, she doesn't, like, apologize for muting his call earlier in the episode.
Yeah. Well, she just doesn't answer the phone, and, like,
I'll just tell him later. It's like, I'll apologize later. And it's like, but then him apparently dying is like, she's like, fuck, I'm never going to get to say I'm sorry. Yes. And that was kind of a real dick move.
And they don't want to make it a real good one thing, because they even, like, go by his apartment, just check
but,
out.
But they're too
saying,
afraid.
Don't open
the
door. If you open the door, that makes it real. And,
yeah, it's the kind of
can't
like
do that right now.
It's a kind of psychological thing of the Chekhov's cat. You don't want to find out the cat's dead in the box.
Yeah,
that kind
well,
of
she's
and
also,
if you don't open the door, you won't.
It's that more kind of than that. He's dead. Is that his
that
existence
would have been,
erased the same
that
way
that their friendship the with him wouldn't
had.
Be the same with him? Yeah, which is rough. Like,
yeah.
But then some weird kids turn up
and say, "Why you just ring him up?
Come on the phone, dummy."
Yeah, ring him on the phone. I'll have macchiato. Or whatever the fuck he orders.
It turns out these are Samurai Caliber's classmates from Neon Genesis Junior High.
I'm not saying this show is bad, but the amount of fucking references in it is kind of really taking me out of the show a lot.
Once I saw all four of them together, I was also like, oh, fucking hell, they're the Elite Four from Kill la Kill.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. I didn't spot that. Yeah. I just spotted the fucking guy who's very clearly Grimlock.
No, there's the guy with swords. God. There's the short girl. There's the giant man. And then there's the other one. But though, they are also assist weapons, as they ring up Gridman and Yuta. And we don't... They're somewhere...
They appear to be waiting for kaiju to appear, like, so they're on the grid, presumably.
They were going to surprise the kaiju when it reappeared, was their plan.
Yeah, but you didn't tell your friends that you didn't fucking die, so that was kind of a dick move, Gridman. but they didn't know. They could have rang him at any stage, I suppose.
Yeah, and he didn't know that he could have rung them.
Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, we have someone to call you. Did you just call them?
Like, that's what the internet and technology and phones are for. They're not just there to keep, they're not ascent to be there to make you feel more lonely. There should be things you use to make you feel less lonely and talk to friends even more than you would normally have to, even to cross distances. So,
like, I guess that might actually be a message in the show, because they did make a very special episode point of that this time.
Yes.
Apparently, according to Wikipedia, Boar, the one who looks like a girl, is a boy.
Oh, okay.
In the Japanese version, but in the Funimation dub, is declared to be female. Been a long time since that happened. Huh. Tekken Blade, I want to say. I think that came after. So, yeah, not sure what's going on there. Anyway, let's go to Wikipedia. I can't remember them. Oh, yeah, it was on Twitter. That's why. Not actually within the show itself yet.
Okay.
So, we shall see what actually happens within the show itself. Yeah, and so this time Max goes in. He's the guy who looks like Grimlock.
Well, he's got a dinosaur's mouth.
Yes. And he turns into the
truck.
Yes.
A truck that becomes arms and a helmet, I guess. Yeah.
Giant arms.
Like, I'm fucking all for giant arms, man. That's one of my favorite robot things.
Which, they're like fucking Frankie's arms.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
Twitter. So you way can too punch big harder body. With your bigger arms. Yeah.
Yeah, Twitter pointed out that's a reference as well.
oh, of course it is. Oh, yeah.
To one of the Yusha shows. I can't remember which one it was now.
I thought it was Jeeg, but now I'm thinking about it. It's like, no, he didn't have arms as a thing, did he?
No.
He had, like, different arms.
It's another show with toys from Takara.
Oh, of course. Yeah, okay. Be more specific.
And then we get another great action sequence, because this is a fucking amazing designed costume sort of... I don't want to call them giant robots, because they're not a giant robot. It's a giant...
They're costumes. The way the guys move, they move specifically like Tokusatsu, where they kind of wave their hands around to make themselves look larger, that kind of thing.
I was also noticing more clearly this time, quite because you had two of them moving around like lots of this. All the little kind of shoulder pads and the fins and things, when they wobble around.
That's
really good. That's a very small little touch, but it makes a big difference.
Oh, absolutely. I think he finishes him by like doing a suplex or something. Like, just... feels right.
Oh, when the opening theme kicks in as well, when you know this fight he's going to be victorious.
If
I think the opening theme works better in that setting than as the opening theme, but I do quite like the song. It turns out, and then they get the explanation that these four people are from the Neon Genesis Junior High.
Fuck's sake.
Even though they're clearly Gridman's weapon systems as well. I love this show. I'm three episodes in, I am surprised just how much I really enjoy it. Even though it is, as you say, it is annoying that even when you don't recognize the references, you know they're a reference just because that's the way Trigger shows are.
Like, I was getting involved in, like, the emotional thing of the your man not being able to admit that he was joking with his friend the other day. It's like, hey, what if the giant monsters are people like you? And he's like, oh, my God, that made him pull his punches, and now he's dead because of me. And I was like, oh, fuck, the thing that he's going through here. And then I noticed that the logo on his T-shirt has a scratch through it, just like the Cybertron Wheeljack figure that he's based on. And I was like, son of a bitch, show, you're taking me out of it. You're taking me out of your emotional fucking investment, you bastard.
The curse of knowledge.
I know, it's fucking awful.
But like, it sounds like it's worse for you, Dwayne, than it is for me.
It's much worse for me. Yeah, that's fine. Like, it's still a good show, but it's really bugging me. I know it's only going to get worse.
My Transformers fandom ended, I'm guessing somewhere in the 100s of the UK Transformers comic.
Mine just kicked into high gear a few years ago, so I'm fucked.
No, that's not true, because I came back for Transformers Animated. I didn't enjoy that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm not going to pick up these until people point them out, really. likewise, I never saw Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad, so I'm not picking up the references to that either. with the...
Right,
yeah. It took me, I didn't get it the first time around, but that's what the SSSS is for.
Yeah.
It seems so fucking stupid now, but... Yeah.
No, it doesn't stand for that. It stands for Neon Genesis Evangelion. Different show.
Yeah, and all the kids, yeah, are named after the Genesis Junior. Neon Genesis Junior High kids are named after the names the things had in that rather than in Gridman.
Yeah.
There's other things which because I looked up Gridman and there's another two combining psychic things. From Gridman, so I don't know whether they'll show up as well later on. Mm. Or maybe Ante will take that role when he has a face turn.
Yeah. I can see that happening because there raises that little question of are these kaiju humans? And then when they have their second round, it's like, are you a kaiju or human? And he's going to go off on, no, I'm a kaiju, I'm going to kill everybody. But he's getting the fucking awful treatment off of Akane after he's defeated. So it's going to turn around and say, I'm not a kaiju, I'm a human. I'm a human being, I'm a person, I'm a real boy. So that's probably put that around a bit.
Yeah, well, Akane's super creepy when she thinks she's killed Gridman. Her behaviour once she thinks she's had her victory is just so creepy and horrible. Currently don't know why she's like this, how she's ended up this way.
Well, you get the impression from her trying to kill people who have given her a very slight in life, like knocking her sandwich, but it's still being totally edible, or a teacher bumping into her and spilling her finished drink. Fucking, really petty, the kind of person who comes after you from fucking 4chan, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Also, we don't know why the city gets rebuilt. We don't know why those... husks of kaiju are still standing there.
Wasn't there the shot of the transition of your man's robot kaiju, whatever you want to call it, being, and then the city kind of resetting to the other thing, and all of a sudden there's three kaiju on the horizon?
Yes. And we don't know why there was one there even before he'd become Gridman.
Yeah, but they seem to just be increasing or something.
Yeah. Love it, love it, love it, love it.
Mm.
It's and it's a great production as well. That's the other thing. It was.
Oh yeah, gorgeous, of course.
It's pretty solid, yeah.
And then on to Gigage no Kitaro, episode 29, The Mad Frankenstein, in which all the horniest staff of Toei got to make a Kitaro episode.
This is horny. I figured it could get a lot more horny.
It could get a lot more horny, but this felt horny for a Kitaro so far.
Within a children's anime.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm fucking too fucking used to that at this stage.
It was you fallen in the water. Oh, I've fallen in the water. And then when Frankenstein showed up with his weird tongue thing.
Oh, that tongue thing was just gross.
And instantly getting a crush on Mana. I was like, ugh. Yeah. And also just some of the drawings as well. It was feels off model in a way that should not be, even the production wise. It's great. I like the episode, and it was just a bit weird on a Sunday morning. I was like,
yeah.
Like the episode. Hate that Frankenstein, but then I'm supposed to hate him. So.
Yes.
I just really instantly just took a fucking violent dislike to him. I don't know, he's just this little creepy little twerp, and I can't wait to see him get his fucking head caved in by Kitaro at some point in the future.
I was wondering, were they doing a more modern adaptation of the Western Yokai by making him the Incredible Hulk?
Yes.
That was a pretty good turn.
Mm-hmm. I did like that as a design choice, because it was so very clearly the Incredible Hulk.
He was doing the fucking Hulk jumps everywhere.
Yeah.
So the plot of this is Agnes having to learn not to use her powers around humans. Kitaro kind of being I've got my eye on you, behave yourself.
Yeah, I'll fucking help you out, but I want you out of Japan once we're done.
Yeah.
I'll help you, but I don't have to like you.
Yeah.
And they briefly find the ring. Agnes and Nozomi Otako, who basically gets fell on and then is not seen for the rest of the episode. He breaks Agnes's fall, and then that's him done for the rest of the episode.
He's dead. Well, he's dead forever.
I mean, like, he's introduced as fighting for like an expensive bento box with some crows, which he loses because he hasn't eaten in 3 days. So I presume he's just going to be unconscious for another couple of days. Quite or something.
Possibly, yeah. And then Mana's like, wow, a real witch. I've never met a witch before.
Come to my house.
Yes.
Straight away.
Hey, Mum and Dad, this is witch. Can you feed this witch? And can she sleep in my bedroom? And then they just fight Frankenstein for the rest of the episodes, and they beat Frankenstein, but he teleports away before they have a chance to properly finish him off. They get a brief explanation of the Brigadoon project, but not really.
Why is she keeping the information?
Either it blows stuff up, or it requires things to blow up, so it as part of the project. I don't know which comes first, really.
Oh, excellent. The mic's down there.
And it is like Agnes saying as well, or saying, like, remembering her mother sacrificing herself for the same thing. Yeah. But again, in what way, we don't fucking know. Yeah. Kind of annoying, but just explain it to Kidero. I'm sure it's maybe not reasonable, but, you know, explain how the evil plan works is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Anything else of note to add? I get the feeling like it feels coincidental that Mana's drawn to Agnes, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, she has got those two magic letters stuck in her from Nameless. I wonder if that is actually the cause.
Sometimes I wonder if like Mana's like coded queer with the way she's interested in Agnes, and the way she goes on and on about Neko Itsume. And but then you have like the Frankenstein, just everyone loves Mana. It seems to be the plot as well.
I did see somebody like commenting on how she's, if you're going to accuse any character of being a Mary Sue, it may be Marv. She's an original character stuck in a...
she's fairly unflawed and everything.
Established
yeah.
thing, and everyone loves her, yes.
Yeah.
I think there may be something there, but I think it might also be like that middle school crush thing they like to write into Japanese girls' fiction.
We got to get the women on board with this as well.
Yeah.
By appealing to that market. Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely got that feeling more with the Agnes thing in this episode than I do with Cat Chick. But again, just maybe whoever was animating this episode or storyboarding this episode or writing this episode.
Yeah, like you said, it's slightly hornier, so yeah. It's going to come across like that.
And who's up next episode? Who gets to fight?
Karen Miller, just in time for Halloween. Yes.
The Vampire's Halloween Party. I suppose there's a good chance of horniness next week as well, considering it's a lady vampire.
Considerably higher.
Yes, it's like Frankenstein. Don't remember the Frankenstein story generally being very horny.
And then, of course, you've got lots of special costumes just for Halloween. So who knows what they're going to whip out.
Oh, fuck, and I think I've seen she's dressed up as a Neko Itsume, isn't she? from the preview, it looked like she's wearing cat ears, and she looks like she's wearing a similar color dress, that kind of thing.
That would make sense, story-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, if you're going to dress up as a monster, why not dress up as the monster you admire the most?
And then the eyeball is just like, off in one corner and saying, that's fine. I don't mind at all. Toby had a good thing going on there, but that's okay. We see who up the most in this family. That's
well,
fine. That's okay.
I will tell you, in Sainsbury's, they do have giant eyeball masks. So if you can find a flesh-coloured suit to wear.
Suit?
Body stocking, that's what I'm thinking. Like, I already can't tell chipmunks and squirrels apart. Don't expect me to find the right words to describe body stuck in the one go.
Well, I was more saying suit as in, why do I need to wear a suit for?
That's if you're cosplaying as your man from Golden Kamuy, which would be a fucking excellent Halloween costume. Any of those things. I mean, like, some are a little too sexual in that case, but still.
Then we've got Skullface Bookseller, Honda-san, Episode 3, A Battle Without Honor or Humanity, and Lost in Manga.
Okay, I did not have the title because it wasn't on...
I looked them up while you were talking about... either Mr. Tonigawa or the other one, Thunderbolt.
Yeah, okay.
Fantasy. So the first part deals with how they deal with the salespeople and the reps from...
The guys from the publishers,
The publishers. Mm. And basically Honda-san saying, I'm terrible at dealing with these people. But luckily I have colleagues who are a lot better than I am.
A lot tougher. I kind of admire as well that these the bookshop employees, they don't just fucking buckle like a belt in the face of the reps and the book companies and say, no, you fucked up last time. You sent us materials after the day after the books arrived. So if you want us to pull up the display properly, you're going to have to get your shit together.
Do your job, motherfucker. Yeah. I also enjoyed like his perfectly rational explanation of it. It was like, hey, why didn't you put our posters up? It's like, we're a bookshop. All the walls are shelves. What the fuck do you want me to do? And they're just like, okay, how about these cards? It's like, oh, fucking hell. There's no talking to them.
And then there's a special guest star appearance from the head of both brands of BD publishers in Japan.
Wow.
They got it.
Always forgotten his name.
Yeah, I've forgotten his name as well. Fuck.
But he's voiced by himself and he speaks Japanese fluently.
Yes. And they explain, yes, that he's the guy responsible for making French comics popular. And I believe there's like a veiled radiant reference in there as well when he asks to put his French shonen manga next to One Punch Man.
I've looked at his name and this has to be a pseudonym because his name is Frederick Tout-le-Monde. That can't be right, can it?
It may well be.
It could be a name.
Frederick Around the World? Unless my French is atrocious. It probably doesn't mean that at all.
That's about it. Tout-le-Monde. There's no T in there, I don't think.
Okay.
Yes, but that is definitely him because the first thing which comes up is his LinkedIn page.
He's voiced by himself, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Frederick Tout-le-Monde, voiced by Frederick Tout-le-Monde.
This would be going straight on my CV. Yeah.
And the second one is his LinkedIn page in English.
Oh, brilliant.
It kind of looks a bit like how he was drawn. Judging from the
In the comic, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
As we see him here. But, so then he shows up. And then the second part is basically how certain people will come into the bookstore wanting to buy a manga, and then when they see how many of the manga there are to buy, they're even more stuck as to which manga they want to buy because they're now spoilt for choice. And so, therefore, as a bookseller, you have to be good about analysing what people want, and then pointing them in the right direction.
Like, I love the kind of pop quizzes, like someone bursts into the storeroom. It's like, okay, I need a book for this kind of person. They're into this genre, and they don't want more than this many volumes.
Shoujo manga, three volumes long.
For a 40-year-old man.
and these have come out in the last 2 decades.
Yes.
That's such good stuff, and it feels like, yeah, you would be kind of knowledgeable. And one of them's like I think Honda's kind of like, oh, I don't really know about that genre, but I think that one's pretty good, that kind of thing. You know, like, where it's like a weird kind of quiz show that the prize is them going, okay, and then they just leave.
And then it turns out he eventually went for Berserk, and they're like, that's the opposite of everything he wanted.
Not the shoujo. It's not the opposite of shoujo. I wouldn't say that.
No, it is. It's in Young Animal. It's in Young Animal. Anything in Young Animal is very much the opposite of shoujo.
There's some very pretty people in it, is what I'm saying.
Big emotions.
It definitely has more than 3 volumes, though. It does not fit that fucking criteria. Yeah.
And then the other example he gives is of a French grandfather wanting something for his... French
that fucking creepy dude. That guy was great. It's like, I'll never forget that. That guy scared the shit out of me. Mercy. What'd you read? I don't fucking know. God damn.
Yeah, it's good. I feel like this episode, I feel like we should get Charlie to watch this, Niall. I also need to get somebody else who I know on Facebook as well, who actually does work in Forbidden Planet. So,
which
one? There's definitely some people who this show is too fucking close to life. Probably, yeah.
He would be manager Kitsune-san, I suppose. Quite the closest I can have equivalent there. Well, I mean, it was you.
This episode, because I assume from the other end, he's dealt with the working for book companies. I'm sure he knows people from the rep side, from the opposite direction. And
the guy's trying to push the stuff. Yeah.
I've dealt with reps, but not from book companies. When I was in the food industry, you'd deal with reps. Particularly when I was in product development, you get the ingredients reps come round.
I imagine it's not too different with them trying to promote the newest fucking thing or the new food fad or something.
Well, yeah. Yes, you'd get, but we...
There's probably similarities, yeah.
There's a lot more money in flavor companies than there is in publishing, though. So what we could do was just get them to take us out for lunch constantly.
Handy enough.
And then give us loads of free gifts as well. There was literally one company would take us out to their car, open up their boots, and we could take whatever we liked out of their boots.
What, like the spare tire and everything?
Almost. I'm pretty sure if they thought it was going to get them a sale.
Oh,
and it never would. We would just invite them over for, yeah.
Fuck's sake.
Finally, Double Decker, Doug and Kirill, episode 5, A Croyd Killer. In which that is actually the killer of A Croyd it's referring to.
Not just someone who kills Croyds.
Yes.
But a person called A who was killed. Oh, God damn it. Okay, yeah.
Who killed Dan Aykroyd?
Zed.
Yeah, so we finally get to the plot. And we learn that Doug did actually have a partner who died.
It wasn't
Derek. Yeah. We also learned very at the start that Derek and Kirill have met, but it is too boring to show you the viewer.
And you just like get a Cliff Notes thing, and I was like, oh, that looks fun. I want to see that. But yeah, the show has decided it's not important.
here, Kirill, have that Derek special. No, you mean like tin of beans.
Did he open a fucking, like, a restaurant that he can't fucking cook in?
But, he opened the bar.
But he is serving food and he doesn't know how to cook, is basically what the problem seems to be.
Yeah.
He can fry chips, but just like, he probably isn't there.
Chips are great, chips are grand.
Beans, noodles, what more do you need? Chips. Ah, fuck.
if they had been, God, what are they called? Potato waffles. It would be very close to what a friend of mine I often see them having for dinner.
I was thinking it's fine, but it's very carb heavy. Like,
it's quite close to being a 3-in-1, or perhaps a forbidden 4-in-1, which is chips, fried rice, chicken balls, and I forget what it is when it's a 4-in-1.
It's another fried thing, is it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I think I know the thing you're talking about, but I can't think what the fourth thing is either. Generally, I'm fucked after the chips and rice.
Yeah, it's having canned spaghetti and baked beans seems...
That's going to cause you trouble. Yeah.
But, yeah. I feel like between that, though, and the pseudo Big Ben, it definitely, those were like the two things of this is a pretend England. It's like, that passes for a meal. Yeah, that's England. And look, oh, there's Big Ben.
Okay, beans on toast are a fine meal.
They are, but I wouldn't have beef. I would, and also canned spaghetti on toast is a fine meal. Not as good as beans, but having them both together and then with frozen chips. I like how he's proud that he cooked the chips and then they point out that they were frozen.
Yeah, he's holding the fucking bag.
Put them in the fryer and I took them out.
Good job, idiot. He's really upset that his ex-partner won't fucking visit him. I'm kind of loving everything about Derek. He keeps introducing characters that I fucking think are great, which is a good show. Yeah.
They probably won't even fry their oven chips. He turned them.
I doubt he fucking turned them.
The actual plot of this episode is that Zabel Franken is about to be set. He's on death row. He's about to be sent to his death. But then for the five people he killed, he says, I killed a sixth and I must speak to Doug Billingham. And so he speaks to Doug Billingham and he says, I also killed the head of the Esperanza organization, A, also known as Agapetus Croyd. And I will tell you the location of his body if you save me from death row.
Yeah, if you can give me like just life imprisonment rather than, but obviously that's not the plan in the end. But seems to be going for a less harsh sentence.
Yeah,
because the reason he's doing it right before he's literally been brought to the fucking execution chamber is he was told by he killed A for B, the second highest guy in the organization. And B said, I'll get you out of prison before they kill you. And he's like, well, they were literally going to kill me, so I'm fucking squealing. Yeah.
But literally everything he's doing is bait for Doug.
Yes.
He says B, I bet because he knows that they just...
They found out about a
guy called Bamboo Man. Yes. Might be. Yes.
What I like is that Kirill is aware of the genre he's in, but he's being distracted by other things which are happening, so he would be the one who would go, this is, because he's worried that he's going to get killed because people keep on like doing things which suggest that Zabel's going to get killed when they let him out of the prison to help them find the body.
This is an armored convoy. It's got all these guards in it. No one can break into this, but stop jinxing us. Stop saying that out loud. You're going to get us all killed.
Zabel starts saying them as well. And I was like, oh, is he doing that deliberately? Because he knows this is going to distract Kirill. Mm. And Doug's already...
Well, once he sees it starts working, he does start playing on Kirill. Like, because when he's alone in the room with Kirill, he starts playing to his weaknesses specifically. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of compassionate thing because there's that one guy who's been an absolute fucking dickhead. And Doug is like nonplussed, doesn't really give a dang. And Kirill's like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you? There's clearly something fucking off about this one. Don't get too close to the case. Get too close to the case to dash without making mistakes. And it's like, you're too close to the case, fucking Doug. You got a file and you're 2 inches thick about this one case. You're telling me you're nonsense about it? Come on.
Yeah. The guy who keeps everything in his head is a thick as fuck file on this case,
Yeah, I did like that.
He lost his partner in.
Because that gave Kirill some sort of sense of, he's competence? Yes. But yeah, it's all an elaborate escape plan, which I felt like, I don't think it was ever really, I hope they weren't writing it in the hope of pulling that over on the viewer.
No, I think they were given I hope they were giving enough clues that like, this is suspect. This guy isn't what he's looking to be. I was like, that very obvious fucking leg dragon thing, I was just waiting for him to walk normally.
Waiting for Cronkaiser, so
was it? Yes, I was like, oh, you've seen Usual Suspects and you've seen A Clockwork Orange.
Well, you might, he's very fucking dressed like that. I didn't pick up on that from the opening, but in this one, it's like, he's like a super version of that.
Well, as well, like his last request for on death row was the chocolate puddings, and also she's like, magazine, you love stuff getting, and doing a crossword in, that will have no bearing on anything that happens later on.
Like, I wasn't aware, like, I figured it was a setup, but I didn't figure, like, that he would be the actual, the guy in charge. I figured, like, he was desperately searching the crossword puzzle for the clue that he needed, like, the information he was being passed from the outside. I figured that, but I thought he was actually, like, a lower rung guy in the organization.
I'd got even one step further. I thought he was A. I thought the limp was because he cut his own leg off and buried it.
Oh! Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't that high.
That's an interesting one.
But that's why.
But they definitely, what I'm saying is they definitely give you enough stuff to figure out, like, this is not what the characters think it is. They're being played. I don't think the audience was being played. I could be wrong about that, but I think the audience was given enough to figure out part of it, or at least see that this isn't fucking legit.
Yeah. And it turns, the thing I didn't foresee was that the brutal prison guard was also part of the scheme, but then they finish him off because he knocked those cakes on the ground.
I don't like people who waste food. What are you, Sanji?
You made one mistake.
Like beating me in the fucking nose with the club wasn't something that pissed me off. It was wasting those delicious chocolate tarts.
But that was okay. That was selling the deception.
Yeah.
However,
it just made him more
plausible. Knock over my puddings. You crossed the line. And your boss the other way around.
I was kind of disappointed there was less fun stuff happening in this one, but I thought the plot was interesting when it came, but then the announcement at the end where the narrator's like, right, now that it's coming to the climax, and then the show's going to go off in a completely different direction. I was like, wait, what?
Yes.
They're going to wrap this up really fucking soon?
It's basically Cops next week, isn't it?
Yes.
Fucking hell, man. Good stuff.
The Esperanza almost seemed like a group of One Piece villains talking of Sanji in there. Weird, like, there's no style going through the entire group. Mm. And they're all different shapes and sizes. And also we learned that while the Bamboo Man has superpowers, they are not being powered by Anthem.
Yeah, they're not showing up as the Overdrive.
Overdrive, yes.
Which is kind of effed up because he's clearly superhumanly strong and fast.
Yeah, he's more superhuman than the ones who've been turned into monsters, essentially.
Because he's still like human shaped and can just leap across town, that kind of way. Yeah.
And then we get the Esperanza logo.
Yeah, it's got like a bunch of what was the bad guys called in the Batman 66 movie? The one with the octopus like grabbing the world. It looks like that kind of thing going on.
Mm.
Yeah, there's like two heads. Mm. I don't know what they're supposed to be, with like snake tongues, like not like tongues which snakes have, but tongues which are snakes.
Mm.
And then there's 8 tentacles coming off them, one holding a sword, one holding a anchor, and there's a crown which both of their heads are wearing together.
Yeah. It's more like a heraldry thing.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's probably closer to that with the, like, it's symmetry, but it's like asymmetry the way it's done.
Yes. Yeah. And it's not the Ouroboros symbol. That's the thing.
Yes. It's not as snappy as that.
Which weirdly was the logo on that casino in the first episode.
You got to pair back your graphic design department there on evil organization. You got too much going on.
But as I said, some of the animators this episode could not get a handle on drawing Travis's face.
His mouth was weirdly big.
Yes.
He looked like a fucking Dick Dastardly, for God's sake.
Oh, fuck, I can see it now. That just improves him in my mind. brilliant.
It's like he's just a little too far away. He's like too far away from standard anime face that I'm guessing is may give some animators a little too much of a challenge. They need to go and watch that new Harvey Birdman special to familiarize themselves of what his face should be looking like. I need to finish watching that. Barely got it started.
Hmm.
Mr. Punch was what I was thinking, but again, that's probably because I've been watching Karakuri Circus.
Everyone's a
puppet. That's everything, I do believe. Don't think everything will get watched by me next week.
Oh, it's very difficult to get that much in. Yeah.
I must work on panels now I've got my energy back again from.
I need to do that as well. Oh, God. Help me.
Just think, there's very few people there, Niall.
What, you can phone it in, is it?
Yeah.
phone it in.
Well, I know, but don't, have, like, what I'm saying is you don't have to, don't allow too much pressure to build up when you're only doing it for a room full of less than 50 people.
Yeah. But I've made a lot of headway on the new one that needed the most work. So, that one I'll be fine. And I've been busy writing the notes for that on my phone at work. And I've got maybe not a ton to do at work sometimes. So I've been trying to just get ahead in the game in that sense.
Sure.
But it's still tiring. I still need to tweak some things with other panels I have done the majority of work for, but just need to change it a little bit. But I'm so tired. I need to watch what around me and do other things and keep other appointments in my life.
Righty-ho. Well, let's wrap things up then. And we'll say goodbye, and we'll be back here next week with... Was it Joining the Gang? That was it.
Joining the Gang.
Feels like a long time ago since I said that. Goodbye!
Bye.
Bonne nuit.